Music Respawn. I'm Kate Remington with Marcin Przybylowicz. I hope I got that right.
Am I close?
Okay, yep. Thank you. You wrote the music for The Witcher 3 and the expansions along with Mikolaj Strojinski. And it is so much fun to have a chance to talk with you, Marcin. I love this music so much. So thanks for joining me.
Thank you for having me. Hi.
You know, it's probably a much bigger project than you imagined it would be. I mean, did you have any idea that you would be spending time in the musical world of The Witcher for, what, like 6 years now?
It's actually 7 years to be precise, but if someone would tell me 7 years ago that being a freelance composer back then, in just 5-7 years, I would become a music director and composer for one of the greatest game of the decade, I probably laugh out loud because, miracles don't happen, basically. But that's what's happened to me, precisely. So I guess there's no point of making plans, in more than a year. And just embrace what life brings you.
Yeah, definitely. Because I suppose once you get into it, you kind of don't realize the scale and the scope, and especially the love that this soundtrack has gotten. It's really remarkable. So congratulations. It's
thank you very much.
A massive achievement.
Yep.
I think one of the things that really caught people's ears right off the bat was those incredible raw Slavic sounds. And how did you come up with that idea in the first place?
Well, it felt kind of natural, but still it took us a while to actually discover what this secret ingredient, as I can call it, to discover what is actually missing in our current formula, because we still need to remember Witcher 3 was the third part of the series. I joined the company CD Projekt Red somewhere around closing development of The Witcher 2, so the soundtrack was more or less done, and my role was to just fill the gaps with additional music and integrate all of that stuff into the game. So I had, you might as well say that I had almost little to none creative input regarding the soundtrack for The Witcher 2, but it still was developing the formula established in the first game. So when the team decided they want to do a third game, which was going to be, the biggest, the law of sequels, right? Bigger, better, more better. So that was the same case here. And they trusted me enough to hire me as a main composer of the game. I knew I had to extend the existing formula. We were in search of some, additional elements to make this music our own and refresh the whole idea a bit. And actually, what helped us the most was reading books. Since The Witcher is based on the books by Andrzej Sapkowski, he invented this universe, he wrote the first adventures of the Geralt of Rivia and all the other characters. We actually had to read carefully those books and come into conclusion that, well, since the story is already grounded in the Slavic universe, in the Slavic myths, rituals, beasts, monsters, demons, and so on, probably we should go the same way with the music and reach for our own folk material from Central and Eastern Europe and try to incorporate with already established other elements. Basically, that's how it happened, I suppose.
It was really inspired because it just gives such a sense of place and time to the game. And, Tolkien in his Lord of the Rings trilogy talks about a lot of music. I mean, there are music in the taverns and stuff. Are there any references at all to music in the original books of The Witcher?
Well, not that much, except of the Dandelion, of course, which is a supportive character to the Geralt. He is a bard and he sings the songs about Geralt's adventures. But other than that, we didn't have that much. So our main source of inspiration was this, I would call it vibe or feeling of the general series of how it's rooted in our mythology, and then trying to translate that aesthetics to musical work, basically.
And it's so cool the way it all worked out. And choosing Percival, the folk band, was an incredible addition. And listening to the score and the soundtrack, you have no idea what the challenges were with working with them, starting with the fact that they hadn't gone to music school except for one of them. And you mentioned in your GDC talk that you almost sounds like we're ready to pull the plug on it. And then you hit on this idea of just having a jam session. So how did you come up with that idea to just kind of put everybody at ease?
Well, I am myself a trained jazz conductor, actually, not a composer by paper or diploma. So I think I have a pretty good understanding of what jazz is, especially given the fact that I was raised in a jazz musician's family. So I've listened to John Coltrane, Miles Davis, and other great musicians since you know, I was 2, 3, perhaps. So it kind of grew on me and became part of my DNA, I can say. So when we hit this critical point of not being able to communicate well with each other. So me being very strict and academic, so basically how I was trained at, you know, musical university, how to approach musicians, do recording sessions with them, and them not really understanding me, what is my main aim, what I want to do with them. So there was problem with expressing thoughts and translating them to the other side. I just thought that maybe we should go back to, you know, take a step back and go back to this really simplistic way of communicating with each other. So, you know, instead of talking, let's just grab instruments and start playing and see what, you know, where that can drive us, where that can take us. And it worked, right? Like a snap, basically. So we picked instruments, we played a few notes, and it immediately clicked. And we discovered that we actually do think the same of music in general. We just had problems with finding the common dialect. That was actually our problem. Communications, yeah. And that's it.
Yeah, and I think that's what happens with a lot of collaborations, even when, say, the developer team at the studio doesn't talk to the composer. And all of a sudden you realize that you have very different ideas of what the music should be.
Yeah,
but that never happened with CD Projekt Red, right? They were always, like, behind what you were doing, right?
That's true, and I'm very grateful for that, because I think we did manage to establish a trust between us. So we, you know, the company itself is full of people of my age. I'm 32 right now. I grew up on Sapkowski's books. The Witcher is, for Polish people, probably as I don't know. I think it may be as recognizable as, let's say, Superman for Americans, for example, or Captain America or whatever. So basically, this is integral part of our own culture. So since we all grew up on these characters, we quite quickly found a way to be on the common ground when it came to talking about them and thinking how we could translate those books characters into video games world. And since I did prove myself with the Witcher 2 work I did for the company, they felt pretty confident to give me a little bit more space and more trust to experiment with ideas, because after all, in the end, what's most important here is to not being afraid of pushing boundaries. So we're not interested in making art in general, because I believe games are art. Not to make this safe, but to take risks, because art demands risks. That's our mission.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things that you did that was more risky and more unusual, definitely, in a game soundtrack were the instruments that Percival used, and then the ones that Mikolai found. I mean, these instruments have such the histories of them, and then their origins. It's almost like they're alive and they've got their own characters. Like, tell me about the viola that was used, because that one has a really interesting history.
Oh, that one thing. Yeah. So that particular instrument we called kemenche, its origin is in Middle East. I don't remember whether it's Iran, Iraq. I don't remember that, but it's definitely Middle East. So the funniest thing for me personally is that people accept the music we did and they call it Slavic, even though academically speaking, it's not Slavic. This is the funniest part for me, because, you know, we do not know how the Slavs in 12th, 13th century consumed music, how they did music, because there were no print back there, right? Hmm. The first printing machine was where? Around 14th, 15th centuries, I suppose, something like that, right?
Yeah.
Gutenberg machine. And once it was invented, the church grabbed it, right? So the first printed books were for the church, like the masses, like the Georgian chants and so on. So it took another 100 years to popularize the printed stuff. And then common ordinary folks picked it up and started to print, you know, ordinary folk music. So it was already something like 16th, 17th century. So after Renaissance, right before the rise of Johann Sebastian Bach, Mozart, and so on. So you know, the classical ones, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we did come up with some modern image of how the music of Slavs could sound like, but it's still a contemporary music with a bit of, I would say, tastes, you know, like you use specific spices when you cook a dish. So you use ordinary ingredients like potatoes, tomatoes, meat, whatever, and then use spices, and then it gets its special flavor. So that was my aim. So we cannot have an instrument which is 8,000 years old, because no museum would allow me to put my fingers on it, right? So instead of that, let's find people who are actually trying to build replicas of those. And Percival was one of those people. So they did find some early prints from 16th century or something like that of instruments which was a grandfather of modern kemenche. And they tried to find it, they tried to buy it, but that wasn't possible. So they decided, what the hell, we're gonna build it ourselves. But they had some sort of materials shortage, because they were unable to find the proper wood. They were unable to master proper, you know, technology behind it to glue this wood, to shape it, and so on. So they just basically, I don't remember what kind of wood actually they used, but, you know, they just picked anything that they had, lying around. So that was no specific material. And suddenly, those random materials put together ended up in having instrument which sounds pretty unique. I think there's no other instrument that sounds like that. It has some similarities with modern kemenche, but it still retains its own identity.
Thank you. it's a really unique voice. And I think what's so cool about it and about how they made it is that it's probably how they got made in the Middle Ages too, with, you know, just any old wood and a couple of strings, and then...
Yeah, exactly, because that's the point, right? You want to make music, so you make yourself an instrument, and you don't not pay attention, you know, how to properly do it, because the most important thing is to express yourself. So build anything and start playing on it.
Yeah, for sure. And what's also cool about the world that you created in The Witcher is that there are these different regions. You know, the Skellige Islands, mm-hmm. and then Novigrad, and the Valen, and yep. each one of them has a really unique musical identity. So working on the music for those different regions, did that keep you from, like, getting stuck and having writer's block?
I do not remember if I had any one moment that could be described as writer's block in project like The Witcher, because the source material was already so inspiring, and those distributions to three main regions, as you mentioned, were diverse enough in terms of stylistic values for me to, you know, jump from one to another and keep myself fresh all the time. Because Valen is the most, let's say, naturalistic, even animalistic sometimes, parts of the world. So there is the biggest amount of this, as I call it, Slavic sound in our game. So it's also expressed in the vocals, because we do not use standard classical vocal techniques. And instead of that, we use growling straight from heavy metal. We use white voice, throat singing. So all those, you know, forgotten old vocal techniques from Central Europe, which people on the West are not really used to, as I can say. I think I'm sort of right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So for sure.
You do not hear it on the radio.
That's for sure.
Very often, right?
Right.
So that already had this this exotic element in it, I think. On the other hand, we have Novigrad and the northern part of the map, which is supposed to be more intelligent, more sophisticated, and a bit more modern, because Novigrad served as, in Sapkowski's world, as the biggest city in the universe, which with some resemblance of 16th century Amsterdam. So we decided to use instruments that have some mechanism that triggers sound. So for example, cymbaloms, pianos, where you have this whole hammer action thing to actually create a sound. And that felt for us appropriate for this region to express its modern factor in the Witcher universe. And of course, there are Skellige Islands, which are based loosely on Nordic myths, but also with some elements from Celtic and Scottish cultures. So that particular mix was also quite interesting for us because we were able to use a lot of bagpipes, Celtic flutes, Scottish drums, and so on. So it kind of created a bit different atmosphere than the two other regions, but still heavily rooted in the Witcher universe.
It's really neat because it's kind of like a microcosm of, you know, the Middle Ages or you know, early 16th or 17th century. Because as you would be traveling around, you know, like musicians did, they travel from place to place, from country to country,
yep, and exactly.
They would hear these different styles of music. So that's really cool that you guys put that in there too. And then you pulled it all together for a live concert not too long ago, which was incredibly well received. First of all, how did the concert come about, and then what was it like picking and choosing the music for the concert?
Well, I have to say, I still cannot believe we pulled that off, really, because we did a concert for over 12,000 people in the audience. We had over 150 musicians on stage, and we played the music from the game as it sounds in the game. So obviously we did some rearrangements to make it fit the stage. Naturally, but we did stay true to the source material. So apart from having large symphony orchestra, apart from having large choir, we had hurdy-gurdy player on the stage, we had Percival on the stage, we had Amir Yagmay, Nikolai's friend on the stage, who played on Turkish and Arabic instruments. So basically we did play music taken straight from the game, pumped up a bit to fit the requirements of the big stage. And I think I can say with confidence we wowed the crowd, because that wasn't the thing they were expecting. They were just expecting, you know, your typical fantasy music from a video game. And instead of that, they were, how should I put it, punched in the face with what we did, actually.
Wow, it sounds amazing. And there is a video of that, or at least there was for a little while. So if people missed
There's
it.
Still video, yeah. Anyone that is interested in the concert can log into gog.com, search for the Witcher concert, and have almost 2 hour treat.
Wow, wow, that is just amazing. You know, you mentioned that this project, working on this project, like really, really pushed you, and it was a fun challenge. And I'm wondering if there's anything that you've been able to reuse in the music that you're working on now for like Seven, The Days Long Gone.
I don't know if reusing would be the good approach, because Seven is a completely different pair of shoes. Mm-hmm. It's a different world set in the post-apocalyptic universe, 300-400 years after the bombing. So humanity managed to rise from the ashes and rebuild the civilization, and they kind of advanced back to some sort of Middle Ages. I'm saying advanced back because the storyline is that when the bombs fell, there was basically nothing. People emerged from the shelters and had to, you know, rebuild everything from scratch. And the aesthetics of the world are very different. So when I was approached by the developers to compose soundtrack for that game, we had to find its own voice, I think.
Mm-hmm.
The process was kind of similar as with The Witcher, but The Witcher had, as I mentioned, two games in the past and a series of books. Here we had to come up with everything by ourselves, and actually that's what we did. Actually, Seven is a very special project to me because it took me a lot of effort to actually make all the things we imagined happen. So the main idea was that let's imagine for a minute that we live in post-apocalyptic world. After we are several centuries after the apocalypse, and we have rebuilt its civilization. And that basically is something like Middle Ages, as I said.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
If people would live in that period of time, and they would want to enjoy music, they would have to build instruments themselves again, right?
Mm-hmm.
So how do you build instruments when you have constant shortage of proper material? So probably you collect scrap and try to build something from scrap. So you take an old bucket, so you take old bunch of strings, for example, old piece of wood, you know, nail it together and you have some sort of some junky guitar, for example, and you try to play a few notes on it and enjoy yourself. So we tried to take this idea and make it happen in our Twitter world. So it took me a while to find someone who would actually either build me those instruments or is an instrument builder already and have built them in the past. It took me a few months, actually, I think 4 or 5 months to find a guy who is not only a music instruments builder, but also a collector. So he, for example, has in his collection Strauss violin, which is this piece of wood with just one string and this metal resonator as the old gramophones had in 19th century, for example.
Wow.
And that instrument is dated, I don't want to be mistaken here, but I think the manufacturer date was like 1907, something like that. So it's over 100 years old instrument.
Yeah.
So I found him, and it took me actually a few weeks to convince him to do recording for the video game, because he wouldn't believe me that video games in general advance to a stage that where you can actually, you know, take risk of doing art and still sell it, still make it as a product, and still make it as a feeling for people. But finally, I gained his permission to visit him, to record his stuff. And after a few days of recording, I had a humongous library of weird, junky, trashy sounds. We just had to edit, catalog, and incorporate with all the music we did already.
Thank you.
And I'm pretty proud of it, actually, because I think that's especially for an indie game where you always have problems with, you know, budgets not being large enough to fund all your wild ideas. I'm really proud that despite all those limitations, we did manage to actually pull this off. And I think the Seven soundtrack may be one of the more original in the indie scene, if you consider recent indie game launches.
Yeah, well, what I've heard so far is just so cool, because it's got that really kind of rustic, unusual sound, you know, the kind of thing you'd hear if you were in, say, maybe the Appalachian region of America, where people are just kind of up in the hills and making music. So did you actually write music for these instruments? I mean, did you treat them like the instruments that we would know, like a string bass or a guitar, or did you just kind of let the sound happen?
Well, partially because we still have composed themes and motifs for certain actions of the game, certain key characters in the storyline. So that melodies had to be composed before we advanced to the recording phase. But on the other hand, not exactly, because I really believe that if someone is an expert on particular instruments, so whether it's going to be this guy who let me record his collection for Seven, or members of the Percival, they are experts within their own area. So they do know the best how to play their instrument. So it's not up to me to tell them how they should perform music on their instrument, because even if I would educate myself, you know, the best way possible, I wouldn't be on par with their knowledge, their experience, and their skill on those instruments. So I just, in those cases, I'm just trying to be a guideline for them, I suppose, to express their creativity to a specific direction that would fit my general idea. And then just hit record button and stuff happens, I think.
Yeah, it's so easy, right?
Yeah.
Wow. Marcine, it has been so much fun to talk with you about this. And I can't wait to hear more of Seven. And I'm still like right in the thick of The Witcher 2. And so thank you so much for spending some time. I've really enjoyed it.
Once again, thank you for having me. All the best for you.